and I will go ahead and pass it over to Jennifer Hanna, who will open today's call.
Thank you, Odessa and Megan. So good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today. I am Jennifer Hanna, Deputy Director of ASPR's National Healthcare Preparedness Programs, or NHPP branch. To begin today's call, I'll provide an overview of our agenda. First, Lisa Dillard, Acting Deputy Director of the Strategic National Stockpile, or SNS, will provide SNS updates. Then I will pass it to David Cernak and Badero Yerrigan from the Healthcare Medical Response and Surge Exercise, or MRCE, team to provide a demonstration of the MRCE real-world tool. Finally, I will provide a few hospital preparedness program announcements. We will conclude with general Q&A and closing remarks. Next slide. Now I will pass it to Lisa Dillard, the Acting Deputy Director for the Strategic National Stockpile, or SNS. Lisa, over to you.
Thank you, Jennifer, and hello to everyone. It's wonderful to be here with you again. I think the last time we were able to join you was in June. So a lot has happened since June. Next slide. But some things haven't changed. So I'll just review for you that we're still the Strategic National Stockpile, the nation's largest repository of emergency medical supplies and equipment. Still working on the $13 billion inventory of medical countermeasures for the types of scenarios you see here on the slide. And next slide. And we are still primarily responsible for ensuring we have category A threat agent medical countermeasures to support any type of response that we may need within the United States, in addition to chemical nerve agent radiation, pandemics, and emerging infectious diseases. But one of the things that has changed, and I'm kind of highlighting in red on my slides today, some updates that I have for you. When I highlight the smallpox formulary issue under the category A threat agents, I primarily want to ensure everyone understands, and I'm hearing a little bit of feedback on the line, not sure if it's just me, that our monkeypox response, at least from the SNS perspective, has been as quick and successful as it has been thus far, primarily because of the investments and preparedness planning we have done as the healthcare community and public health community around the smallpox response. So those of you who may have been with us either through the FEP preparedness agreement or through HPP understanding that we still have those requirements for the category A threat agents has truly been beneficial for our preparedness and our quick response towards monkeypox. Next slide. For those who may not have been on back in June, I provided the slide as an overview of the SNS formulary by threat, not necessarily by type of drug, but by the types of drugs and their purpose. I wanted to share this just to remind us that when you look at what we have for the threat, primarily around the prophylaxis side, we are looking at those types of medical countermeasures that may be used by public health in points of dispensing or mass vaccination clinics. And when we look on the treatment side, we're looking at those countermeasures that... Thank you. We're looking at those countermeasures that are primarily designated for the hospital point of care. So from an SNS perspective, ensuring that the hospital preparedness side and public health preparedness side are linked is truly one of the missions that we have going forward. And I just have to continue to thank Jennifer for including us on these discussions so we can bridge that gap together. Next slide. So some of the takeaways from the SNS perspective, I just want to remind everyone that we are intended as a bridge and a stopgap for the commercial market when it comes to those items such as personal protective equipment. It is not intended for us to replace or substitute the commercial market, but in some instances, as you go into the next bullet where I have in red, we are, meaning the SNS and the federal government, we are the only game in town to support the response. And again, we're seeing that as monkeypox is a clear example of this. the SNS does not define our requirements. So if you're looking at our list of what types of drugs or vaccines, therapeutics we may have in the SNS, it is a governmental, well, a collective body, including government, academia, just everyone at the table around the public health emergency. Help me with FEMC, Public Health Emergency Medical Countermeasures Enterprise, one of the great acronyms that we have, that does determine what goes into the stockpile. And lastly, we have had the luxury of expanding our inventory, the increased breadth and depth of the SNS, primarily around emergency and supplemental funding. But like you all, for the monkeypox response, we have not received any supplemental funding. I believe emergency funding has been used for this. But I think as a community, we can kind of see the difference when we do not have supplemental funding and we have to work with the resources that we have in order to accomplish the mission. Next slide. So just a quick update, Jennifer asked me to talk about the monkeypox response. So next slide. We were activated when I spoke to you last, probably about 2 weeks in, but we've been activated since May of 2022. We are supporting the National Monkeypox Vaccine Strategy. It's a comprehensive whole of government public health response. We participate in daily calls with not only the White House, but a lot of the other agencies within the Department of Health and Human Services, CDC specifically, along with those who manage vaccines at the state and local level and those grant recipients on the vaccine side. So really a lot of collaborative effort around this. We're deploying medical countermeasures, both vaccines and therapeutics throughout the country. The last bullet shows you exactly where we are within those deployments. There are about 1,700 deployments from the SNS warehouses specifically, divided between the JYNNEOS vaccine, according to the tranches that the CDC and HHS have set up for the JYNNEOS vaccine deployments. A little bit of ACAM going out, and in addition to the Tecovirimat or TPOX, which is in the oral and IV formulations that is being distributed directly to hospitals. Next slide. So one of the strategies, or I guess primary goal of the National Vaccination Strategy, is to ensure that we are equitably allocating and distributing our countermeasures safely and effectively. We have made about 1.1 million vials of JYNNEOS available for ordering for the states. And we have delivered as of September 2nd, about 800,000. I think today's number was about 830,000 vials have been delivered. We're supporting some pilot programs based on certain populations may have some events going on. There were a lot of pride events going on that support the target population for monkeypox. So we were able to allocate within the amount that we had within the federal government to those jurisdictions that were hosting those community events and allowing them to do some on the ground interventions, which was really good. We are looking at other populations that may emerge. I know one that the ASPR was concerned about was college campuses as school is coming back. So we're trying to stay ahead of those types of gatherings or people coming back together that may require some additional interventions and standing ready to support those. I've been providing some ongoing technical assistance to the jurisdictions as they plan, whether it's surveillance, and that's not necessarily the stockpile, but CDC, but also from our perspective, ensuring that they have distribution plans in place to help effectively support getting the vaccine and countermeasures out to the population. And then also, most importantly, BARDA is working to acquire additional JYNNEOS vaccine, and we're looking to increase our inventory towards the last part of the year, and we'll have effective doses that will have more information to come as they come into our stockpile. So we are looking by the end of the year to truly have a lot more JYNNEOS within the stockpile, in addition to BARDA's effort to do some fill finish within the United States as well. That will also increase our numbers for the vaccine. Next slide. Around the ACAM 2000, not necessarily being used at this point, but it is approved in one of the regulatory mechanisms as an expanded use for monkeypox. It is one of the, all of these countermeasures, like I mentioned, are approved for smallpox preparedness, but ACAM and also the Tecovirimat has also been available that is being used and we have been deploying. I do want to mention, just to so you can understand why we had JYNNEOS on tap. JYNNEOS was within our formulary along with ACAM 2000 for vaccine that we would deploy for smallpox, but it was primarily approved for smallpox in those populations that may not be able to handle ACAM 2000, the more immunocompromised population. So this is why we had the JYNNEOS in our inventory originally. And then the red dot bullet will talk about our implementing enhanced medical countermeasure distribution strategies. What I'm excited to talk about, I guess with a preview, and I can't really get into any of the specifics around the distribution strategy, but we have entered into a contract with a distributor, AmerisourceBergen, and we're going to be able to enhance our current distribution from about 250 shipments per week. I think we were allowing each jurisdiction, each state, five delivery sites up to 2,500 per week. So that means the jurisdictions can get up to 150 delivery sites per week. Now, that is going to be broken down by jurisdiction based on how much vaccine you have been allocated. So I won't say everybody's going to get 150 sites. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is within the strategy, we'll be able to do up to 2,500. And depending on how much vaccine you have been allocated through the CDC, they've done a formula where we can sort of match that with how many delivery sites you can get. So the good news today that I can give you is you're getting more than five. Okay. So I hope that works for you all. And more information will come out from not only us and the further communications, but we're very excited about that because we realize it was a challenge. We realized that equities were involved. And quite frankly, our director, since we don't have supplemental funding, he took some money out of Hyde, and we'll just figure out how to replace that money later because this is important now. Next slide. And I'll close with some current initiatives. I think I spoke last time about, you know, we're happy to be here because we haven't had a relationship with this stakeholder group as much as we would have liked to. We know the FEP real well, but getting to know you all real well, we believe it's necessary to talk because most of the items that we have in the stockpile, or many of them are designated for hospital and point of care use. In addition to originally the personal protective equipment that we had in the stockpile was designated for the protection of healthcare workers. So there are some equities that we have with the healthcare community that we're hoping we can continue to talk about and improve upon within this forum. I mentioned that we were trying to do some things to get into the healthcare preparedness arena. We presented in December 21. I think when I said that we were trying to present in Anaheim, Jennifer made a phone call and made it happen. So we are presenting in Anaheim in December 2022. I mentioned we were trying to have some regional engagements. That is happening as well. We have our first one on the books for Region 9 within the first week of November. And we are ensuring that the healthcare preparedness stakeholders within the states are invited. So if you're in Region 9 and you have not heard about this yet, I'd encourage you to get with your FEP colleagues, or you can get with us directly. Just send me an email, lsw9@cdc.gov, and we'll ensure that you are incorporated into that planning because we really want you all there. We want to hear about the topics that you think we need to talk about as well. I think that is my last slide. Next slide. Yes. So Jennifer, I think that's all I have today. Thank you for the opportunity to present.
Thank you, Lisa. And I think on the next slide, we have a slide for Q&A for anyone that may have any specific questions regarding the update. But just while people are queuing up their questions, just want to thank you, Lisa, for being a partner and being willing to come onto these calls. And please let us know how we can help to amplify the messaging to ensure that it gets to our healthcare community that needs to know it. So I see that we have a hand raised from Erin. Erin, I'm not going to mess up your last name, Gettinger or Gettinger, here. And if you would like to unmute and ask your question live, please do.
Thank you, Jennifer. And like many others, I feel like I answered to hey you or really anything. So thank you. Lisa, very much appreciate the time that you've been putting into these. These updates are remarkably helpful. You mentioned that the SNS is supporting a pilot program to provide additional vaccine to some jurisdictions with large community-based events. Could you share how a state would participate in that or request a pilot?
So that pilot was primarily around the Pride events that were going on throughout the country. So I think within the past month or so, there, Charlotte, Louisiana, I know Atlanta had a lot of Pride events, so they reached out to CDC to get some additional support so they wouldn't necessarily have to use their allocations with that type of larger population coming in. I would think if you had any type of questions or specific events that were going on within your jurisdiction that were going to strain you, you'd reach out. I mean, you can reach out to me and I can get you to the right place, or you can reach out through your vaccination points of contact to CDC. And that's how they have been getting into us for the national vaccine strategy. Does that make sense? I don't want to send you long ways. If it's easier, just reach out to me, Erin, and I'll get it in the right lanes.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And just a reminder for anyone that has questions, please feel free to enter those into the chat or raise your hand and then we'll call on you so you can unmute yourself. Okay, so I'm not seeing any questions in the chat or any raised hands. So I think we're going to go ahead and transition to our next agenda item. But please, as a reminder, we will have time to answer questions at the end of today's call if something comes up. And certainly you can direct any of those questions to Lisa and to any of the other speakers that are going to be forthcoming. So as I said, we're going to transition now to the Mercy team with Dave Cernak and Badero to give you an overview and a demonstration of the medical response and surge exercise real world tool. So I'll pass it now over to Dave and to Badero.
Hey, thank you, Jennifer. And good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone, depending on which time zone you're in. And thank you for the opportunity to present the real world tool component of the Mercy to everyone today. Just for everyone's awareness, this tool was created following feedback that we received from multiple HCCs over the past year. So this tool is a great example of how the Mercy will continue to grow and develop and evolve based on use and feedback provided by healthcare coalitions across the country. But before we jump completely into the tool, I'd like to quickly provide some background. If we can go to the next slide, please. So first and foremost, the MRSE is an exercise requirement. It's right there in the name, the medical response and surge exercise. However, unlike other program requirements within an HPP, we decided to institute a flexibility and a process for healthcare coalitions to utilize real-world incident responses in order to satisfy this annual requirement. To assist the healthcare coalitions with determining if an incident response qualifies for the flexibility, we put together a list of criteria and incorporated a pre-screening questionnaire that we'll review shortly that healthcare coalitions will be able to review and complete prior to seeking approval from their state as well as from their assigned FPO. So before we really go any further into the tool, I'd just like to quickly review that criteria. Now, I mean, obviously it should go without saying, but for a response to really be considered, first and foremost, the healthcare coalition must activate their coalition's response plan. Additionally, similar to the exercise itself, the coalition will need to support or respond to a surge that's equal or greater to 20% of the required bed types within their jurisdiction. This is similar to the exercise. This is a core requirement of the MRSE. So there really isn't a lot of flexibility around the 20% piece, but this is one of the things that as coalitions become more and more familiar with what their baseline 20% is, it will allow them to more quickly determine whether or not an actual real-world response would qualify to meet this requirement. We're not anticipating a lot of real-world responses throughout the year. However, knock on wood, you never know what happens. Things may pop up that qualify, but we anticipate there's probably going to be a lot of responses out there that healthcare coalitions support that just don't quite cross that threshold. In addition to the total volume of surge itself, at least one of each of the healthcare coalition members, the core members have to participate in the response. So each of the core members needs some role in the actual real world response. At least one executive from each of the core members should be participating in the AAR review. This is one of those criteria that we look at closely with the exercise piece. But when it comes to real world responses, we tend to see that there's a lot more engagement in AARs. So I don't anticipate there being a lot of issue with this one. Healthcare coalitions also need to be able to capture all the data points required for the MRSE performance measures. So it's going to be very important that healthcare coalitions are familiar with the performance measures, what those requirements are, and what those data points are prior to any kind of future responses in order to allow them to ensure that they're actually trying to collect and address some of that information during the actual response or have the ability to go back and find that information after the fact. Next slide, please. Just like an exercise, real-world responses typically will always have an AAR with an improvement plan associated with them. The healthcare coalition doesn't necessarily have to lead the AAR process for the response, but they should be engaged in it. They should participate in and contribute to the AAR. That AAR may be developed by another agency. However, during the review process, if we're looking to determine if the incident would qualify, we may request that the coalition provides a copy of the AAR in order to provide some additional background or understanding or information as to the coalition's role, the type of the scenario, the scope of involvement the coalition had, the impact of the healthcare system, et cetera. So as long as the healthcare coalition has access to that AAR, that will be a key in determining whether or not it qualifies. And then finally, just like the exercise, the real world response should be something that has discrete bookends or a discrete beginning and a discrete end, right? We're looking for a surge that takes place within a very finite period of time in order to determine whether or not that the healthcare system is truly being surged significantly at any given time or whether or not it's kind of one of those slow burn over a long period of time in order to try and hit the numbers kind of piece. But we're looking to find responses that do have, like I said, a specific start and a specific end date. Aside from that, those are the core criteria. There's some additional information that Bedera will review moving forward once we get into the tool that you'll be able to review and be able to assist the coalitions with moving forward. So without that, let's go to the next slide and I'll turn it over to Bedera to review the materials and the tool. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. So what we see on the slide here, these are the materials that healthcare coalitions or HCCs will use as they prepare to complete the real world tool. So starting from the left, we have the tool itself, which is located in the CAT only. I'll walk through it shortly to highlight the slight differences from the exercise tool. Next is the situation manual, which includes instructions for each tab of the real world tool in Appendix C. The situation manual is found on the CAT and the Mercy website. And then we have the evaluation plan, which provides additional guidance on how to calculate the performance measures. It's also found on the CAT and on the Mercy website. Please note the new ASPR logo for the Mercy supporting materials. Next slide, please. So here are some important considerations for subrecipients to take note of when they're using the tool. As Dave had mentioned, the first tab in the tool is a questionnaire, which must first be submitted to the HCC's recipient and FPO for approval of meeting the Mercy requirements prior to completing the tool. All tabs preceding the improvement planning tab should be completed in full to ensure all performance measure data are collected. The after action review tab in the tool must be fully populated to support some of the HCC's PMs or performance measures. And the HCC should have an AAR or improvement plan available upon request. Finally, the only optional tabs in the tool are the improvement planning tab and the participant feedback tab, which I'll show you in the tool. Sorry. Next slide, please. So now I'll pull up the tool and focus on highlighting what the key differences are from the exercise tool. So let me share my screen real quick here. Okay. So when the HCCs open up the real world incident reporting and evaluation tool, the first tab that they'll see is the questionnaire tab. And the intent of this tab is to help the HCC determine whether their real world incident qualifies for use in lieu of conducting the Mercy exercise. Sorry. So I'll start up here in the instructions. We're asking the HCCs to answer all the screening questions and to provide additional details about the scenario. As Dave mentioned earlier, they must have core executive member participation in the AAR and should have the AAR and IP available upon request. And we're asking them to submit this completed tab to the recipient and FPO for final review and approval prior to completing the remainder of the tool. And if they have any questions about the prerequisites or parameters, we'll be referring them to their recipient and FPO for additional guidance. So scrolling down on this tab, we ask for the HCC name and the HCC recipient. In this first table here are the real world incident screening questions, which are derived from the criteria that Dave had gone over. So I won't go through all the questions because it's a repeat. But ideally, we'd like to have the HCCs respond yes to all of these questions for the incident to qualify. However, if an HCC responds no to a couple of the questions and they feel very strongly that their real world incident does qualify, we're going to refer them to their recipient and FPO to have additional discussion as to whether the incident does qualify. Bringing your attention to question two, which is asking the HCCs to calculate that 20% surge threshold to meet that requirement. HCCs will use this table below. This is the exact same table that was created in the exercise tool. So HCCs are required to input their total staff bed numbers for these required beds during the time of the incident. And then whichever additional optional beds that they used for their incident, they can go ahead and input those numbers over here in the second column. And then the tool will go ahead and calculate that 20% for them. So if they're able to meet that requirement, then they can move on to providing additional information in this tab. So next over, we're just asking for additional details about the incident, for example, the type and severity of patient injuries, whether additional agencies were required to help with the incident, and any other information that they feel is important for the recipient and FPO to know about the incident. Scrolling down, just like in the exercise tool, we ask the HCCs to choose which incident hazard categories best describe their real-world incident response. And then at the very bottom, we've included a section where they can add the start and end date and start and end time of the overall incident response and the activation and deactivation of their response plan. So the good thing about these two last tables here is that the dates and times auto-populate into the AAR tab. So as the HCC is conducting their hot wash, they'll readily have access to that information. And then at the very bottom, we have a couple of qualitative questions that the HCCs will respond to. So just like the exercise tool, we have qualitative questions that have been positioned throughout the tool. So HCCs will respond to those qualitative questions to add or to provide more information about what their incident was about. So I'll quickly go through the next couple of tabs because they're the same as the exercise tool. They've just been adapted for the real world incident. So in this tab, which is the incident response details tab, HCCs are required to provide information about the essential or critical resources and essential critical member organizations that responded to the incident. So what we're asking for here are for them to select the pre-identified essential and critical resources as well as member organizations based off of their response plan and their HVA. And so in these tables below, the HCC will be able to indicate which resource was essential or critical for the incident. And they also have the option of including the non-critical resources that they used for their incident, if they feel that it will help add to the story for their real-world incident response. So next over, we have the real-world incident initial actions tab, which is exactly the same as the exercise tool, just adapted for the real-world incident. And HCCs will respond to qualitative questions that have been listed in their tab to inform incident recognition, as well as communications, activation, notification, mobilization, and demobilization. Next over, we have the incident operations tab. Again, this is very similar to the exercise tool, has been adapted for use for a real world incident. So HCCs will provide information about the methods that they used for information sharing, as well as the resources that were available to them during the incident. So just scrolling down, I quickly wanna highlight a key change that has been made to this tab. So if you recall in the previous version of the exercise tool, we had a patient search summary table that informs performance measure 19, the calculation for performance measure 19. And that table had about 10 questions that were used for the performance measure to help the performance measure 19 calculation. So we've pared down the table to about 5 questions here, and we clearly show how performance measure 19 is calculated in this table. So we have 3 columns, A, B, and C, which are used to ultimately inform our performance measure equation of C over A. One thing that we do require HCCs to do, and we've noted it in our instructions, is that they completely fill out this table if they would like an accurate calculation of the performance measure. So if they leave out information from this table, there's the risk of not getting a correct calculation of performance measure 19. So just wanted to highlight that. So just to give an example, if we look at column A is asking for the number of surge patients and existing patients requiring admission for inpatient care with an appropriate staff bed after patients were discharged. So the HCC will look at these three questions at the bottom here and go back to their documentation and enter the patient numbers to answer those questions. And that's the same thing for column B and column C. Just wanted to highlight a quickly highlight an example over here. So in row one, we have Adventist Health Hospital, which is the name of the receiving facility that an HCC would input into this table. We ask if the facility is located within the jurisdiction. So they have the option of choosing yes or no. And then they'll go ahead and enter their patient numbers in here to respond to each question. One thing that the table does do, if a number is entered that doesn't seem applicable to the equation for the table, the cells will turn red, indicating that there's an error in the table. So this gives the HCC the opportunity to go back to their documentation to review their numbers and make sure that they have their numbers entered correctly. And if this tool, say, was uploaded to the CAT and the recipient of the FPO sees these red cells, that will be an indicator for them to go back to their HCC or subrecipient and ask them to review the numbers in this table. So next over, we have the after action review tab, which is the same as the exercise tool. The one update we've made is just transferring over the dates and the times, so they're easily accessible for HCCs when they're conducting their hot wash. One thing that we do require in this tab is for HCCs to completely fill out this table, giving more information about the member organizations. So we're asking if the organization is a core HCC member, if they participated in the real world incident response, and if an executive participated in the AAR. So the reason we need them to complete the table entirely is because the information from this table helps to calculate performance measures 20 and 21. So next over, we have the improvement planning tab, which is one of the optional tabs in this tool. This is exactly the same as the exercise tool, so no changes to highlight here. The performance measures have remained the same in terms of the language of the performance measures. We've migrated the language from the exercise tool into this real world tool. The reason we've kept the language the same for the performance measures is that we want to be able to standardize the data across both the exercise tool and the real world tool. We've highlighted in the instructions that in this context, pre-identified and critical refer to the resources that the HCC has identified as essential or critical in the real world incident details tab. Also, exercise in this context refers to the real world incident. So if HCCs or subrecipients have any questions about the performance measures, we'll refer them to their recipients and FPO for additional guidance. And finally, the participant feedback form is a new tab that has been added both in this tool and the exercise tool. What we'd like to do is collect feedback from HCCs after they've used the tool. And again, this is an optional tab. We have two parts asking different questions about preparation for completing the Mercy tool, as well as questions about the Mercy tool and the supporting materials. So at this point, I'll stop sharing so that Megan, you can bring the deck back up. Thank you so much. So I just wanted to highlight again, important Mercy updates that I briefly mentioned earlier. So in both the real world tool and the exercise tool, we've updated the patient surge summary table. So if you see at the top, we had close to 10 questions that were being used to help calculate performance measure 19, but now we've pared it down to 5 questions to ease data burden entry for HCCs. Next slide, please. And also quickly just wanted to highlight that we have that participant feedback form. It's optional, but it would be very helpful to the support team if HCCs could provide feedback about the Mercy tools. Next slide, please. So these are just next steps that we usually provide during our office hours when we present the tools. So we ask HCCs to review the materials and provide any questions or comments via the Mercy mailbox. So the email address for the Mercy mailbox is mercy@hhs.gov. ASPR holds monthly office hours for HCCs to discuss any questions that arise during review or to provide live feedback for any questions that they have about their exercises. And we usually announce these office hours in the readiness bulletin. And we have these websites in the deck provided for you if you have additional questions about the Mercy or if you need more resources about the Mercy. Next slide, please. And I'll hand it over to Dave here.
Hey, thanks, Badero. I'd just like to quickly share with everyone a recent piece of Mercy-related news. I know many of you probably had this experience, but as you're working on a project or a program, you're always asking yourself, you know, is it going to add value to the users, to the individuals and organizations that it's going to impact? And we recently found out that the Mercy was utilized by one of our healthcare coalitions. And in their words, it definitely added value to their preparedness efforts. In April of this past year in New Mexico, the Mercy was reported to have bolstered communication and coordination during a real-world response and evacuation for a wildfire that occurred 1 week after they completed their exercise. In the words of Mr. John Hodges, their healthcare coalition coordinator, he stated that because of the lessons learned from the Mercy, we were able to quickly mobilize our assets to provide continuity of care to those that needed it. And we were very thankful for New Mexico for reaching out to us, to letting us know of this experience, providing us their insight and their feedback. If you'd like to read the article, we published it this past week in the Healthcare Readiness Bulletin. So you can go there, you can take a look. I believe the link is also gonna be put in the chat for you to direct link to that article. But it was a fantastic piece of news and we're very happy to share it with everyone and looking forward to receiving hopefully more feedback similar to this from healthcare coalitions as they conduct the Mercy and improve their overall preparedness for future response. So without further ado, then we'll jump to the next slide. And if we've got time, maybe take a question or two and then turn it back over to Jennifer. Thank you.
As a reminder, you can enter your questions into the chat, written questions into the chat, or you can raise your hand and we'll call on you and you can ask your question live. You may have noticed that the team that has been displaying the slides also dropped all of those links that were included in the deck from the Mercy presentation into the chat for your convenience and easy reference. Following up on or putting a finer point or foot stumping of the information that both Badero and Dave shared. We really want to encourage your healthcare coalition to participate in those office hours. It's really an opportunity to really engage and to be able to ask questions live with the Mercy support team. Also, as a reminder, ASPR implemented a flexibility allowing healthcare coalitions to complete the Mercy at least once in budget period 3 or budget period 4. However, all healthcare coalitions need to complete the MERCY in BP5. So we'll pause here for any additional, for any questions that anyone may have regarding the MERCY real world tool. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions at this time, but just want to, of course, thank Dave and Bedaro for your update regarding the MERCY real world tool. And we'll move to the next slide, please. Thank you. So I just have very few hospital preparedness program announcements that I wanted to share with folks before we move into our general Q&A. But this morning, a follow-up email was sent with the recording, transcript, and slides from the July HPP-FEP Joint Business Meeting webinar. If you didn't receive that, please send an email to the HPP resource mailbox, hpp@hhs.gov, and we'll make sure that you receive all of those materials. As a reminder, responses to the FY 2022 budget period for conditions of award are due Friday, September 16th. So please make sure that you submit those responses. The BP4 requirements, I know that there has been quite a bit of interest, a number of inquiries about when those will be posted on the ASPR website. We're finalizing those and they should be available in a few weeks. Please look for an announcement within the bulletin for that information. What we may do is while those requirements are being made 508 compliant, we may send those out to everyone in advance while those are being posted on the website. But you should receive those within a few weeks and or it'll be posted within a few weeks. The final announcement is related to the HPP end of year performance measure data, which are due by 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, September 30th. Please access the Performs system and complete the required performance measures reporting the fiscal year 2021 budget period 3 of the HPP cooperative agreement by that time, 11:59 p.m. on Friday, September 30th. We would also like to remind HPP recipients that the budget period 3, performance measure 4, organization files are to be reviewed, updated, and returned to the Sharper mailbox, that's sharper@hhs.gov, by Friday, September 23rd by 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. Please note that the addresses for non-core member organizations are no longer required. Additionally, ASPR is hosting a second training session to review the performance measures module. The session will be held tomorrow, Thursday, September 15th, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Please refer to the ASPR Healthcare Readiness Bulletin for further event details. Next slide, please. So as we near the end of our discussion today, I will go ahead and transition here into general questions that you may have. This is an opportunity, of course, for you to ask any question that you may have, whether it was information that was presented during this call or questions that you would like to have answered during today's call as well. And our speakers are available, of course, to respond to any questions that you may have thought of after their discussion. So please enter your question or drop your question into the chat directly or use the Zoom feature to raise your hand and we will ask you to unmute. Hey, I see a question here. It says, please repeat the conditions of award response due date. The due date is Friday, September 16th. So I have another question here. Is the HPP BP3 APR due on November 14th, 2022, it is open in Performs. I will have to look in Performs to see that exact date, but whatever date is posted there is when it is due. I know that it is open, but we'll certainly follow up with that. Again, if you have any questions, please enter those into the chat or please raise your hand and then you can unmute yourself to ask your question live. But we will get that response regarding the BP3 APR in our follow-up email. So I'm not seeing any questions in the chat, and I don't see any hands raised. So I think that we're going to go ahead and move to our last slide. Again, just want to thank our attendees for your active participation today, and thank you to our speakers for sharing your afternoon with us and providing your expertise. We look forward to our next webinar. And in the meantime, stay connected with us on social media platforms to receive the most up-to-date information about how ASPR is contributing to healthcare preparedness and response for communities across the nation. So thank you again for your attendance, and we hope to see you at the next webinar. So thanks again, everyone, and have a wonderful afternoon. Thank you.